I don't really have a sermon today. I have three observations about Sukkot. I won't keep you very long. The first is, and actually the best way to illustrate this is to just remind you what the lulav looks like. The first is courtesy of our conservative rabbinic colleague, Jack Reamer, who is a wonderful darshan. He's written so many sermons that other rabbis have quoted that I can't begin to tell you. And one of them is, he asked his congregation one day to look at the lulav and ask what was the most important part of the lulav. And he pointed out that all the different branches represent different kinds of Jews and so on. And he said, but the most important part of the lulav doesn't have a name. He called it the thigamabob. He said, it's the thing that holds all the branches together. Because that's what really matters in Jewish history, is not the different kinds of Jews, but the thing that ties them all together. So the next time you look at your lulav, remember that the most important part of it is the part that we don't have a name for. It's the part that keeps the rest of the lulav all together. That's Sukkot observation number one. And I've only got three. Number two is, you may or may not know this, the rabbis in the Talmud debate whether you can use an elephant as one of the walls of the sukkah. Honest to God, they really do. In fact, if you go on YouTube after Yom Tov, and you YouTube and you Google elephant sukkah, there's even a YouTube video that illustrates this. It's very cleverly done. Because they said, well, if the walls of the sukkah have to be temporary, what if one of them is alive? Like, what if an animal walks over to the sukkah and stands there? Does that count as a wall? And they begin to debate it. And I don't remember, I think it's because of height that they come to the elephant, but then they decide, what about an elephant? And then they say, well, it's a problem because the elephant could walk away. And someone says, well, what if you tie the elephant in place? Then does it count as the wall of a sukkah? And by the way, it does. In case you got one on the premises. But you understand that the rabbis never thought that anybody would ever use an elephant for the sukkah. But it shows you the essential agility, skill, and playfulness of the rabbis' minds. That they were thinking of all sorts of possibilities, even things that could never be. It was sort of the rabbinic way that you play. Just like Rabbi Yirmiyah, who was the most famous for this, the rabbis were talking about the fact that if you find a bird inside the border of your property and it has died, then it belongs to you. If it's outside your property, it belongs to whoever's property it's in. And Rabbi Yirmiyah says, what if one leg is inside and one leg is outside? For which it says the rabbis threw him out of the Beit Midrash. But you understand that it's the play of the mind. It's the legal play of the mind because the rabbis were religious lawyers. And they were trying to think of every possibility and every contingency. And then the third observation is that Sukkot reminds us, and I thought about this with the Hoshanot, how separated we are from land, from agriculture. Because you understand that all of Sukkot, more than any other holiday, you feel the connection with the land. One of the explanations of the sukkah is that those are the booths that people lived in when they harvested, right? Because they harvested sometimes very far from home. And when you have a lulav and an etrog and a sukkah, you remember that Judaism was for most of its history very tied to the actual soil, to the land. When we talk about loving the land of Israel, we don't usually mean the dirt. But our ancestors meant the actual physical land. I remember people still sometimes do it, but not as much as they used to, that when people would get off at what is now Ben Gurion and used to be Lod Airport, they would actually kiss the ground. But you were kissing the asphalt, you know? I mean, it was the paved landing pad. But the idea was that you actually loved the earth and the soil of Eretz Yisrael. And what you realize when you do the Hoshanot especially, it looks very pagan. It looks like what ancient idolatrous civilizations used to do. Like we're worshiping the god of the earth. And I think that's probably true. That is, in the ancient world, people did just what we did, but they were actually worshiping the soil. Instead, Jews did the same thing, but they pointed upward. That is, they were worshiping God who created everything, instead of going only one step and worshiping the earth that it should yield crops, we went the extra step and worshiped God who created the earth that it should yield crops. And so now I want to say that all three points are in some ways together. Each one has to do with a wider range and a greater embrace than you might think. If you get lost in only the three branches of the lulav, you don't see the thing that surrounds them all. If you don't have a playful mind, then you miss the larger generalizations about what does a temporary wall mean and what is a permanent wall. And if you get too tied up into crops and soil, then you miss the larger issue of God and transcendence, which our tradition taught to the world. So Sukkot is about the bigger things, ultimately. It's why even though you sit in a sukkah, and it's supposed to be temporary, you have to be able to see the stars. Because ultimately, you have to know that there are things that are bigger, greater, more embracing than we are ourselves. That's three observations about Sukkot. Chag Sameach.